Steve Kenson of Green Ronin Publishing, line developer of Mutants and Masterminds, and you're listening to The Gamer's Haven.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Might help if I turn my mic on and
might help with
welcome back to the Gamer's Haven podcast. Yay! We have mic power. Or something. We're all here, we're all on laptops, we're all hooked on Facebook, apparently.
Not really. But I'm trying to get into this Mafia Wars game you guys keep talking about.
Mafia Wars! I've been playing it for a day. I went to work, too.
Yeah. Well, work is good. I hear Robin got a job.
Yeah, she starts Thursday. We don't know what her shift is yet. So it could be totally crappy, but it's towards her...
It's work.
Yeah, I don't really care about that part. Because the money she makes...
It's going to be...
minuscule. But the nice thing about it is she can be trained to a vet tech in addition, which she'll go to school. So when she's looking for an actual job as a vet tech, she'll have both the experience and the education.
Oh, well, what are we talking about today?
Large groups and small gaming groups.
Woohoo! Gaming with small amounts of people and large amounts of people. That's gonna be good.
Yeah.
We'll be back right after this with some nice discussion, and then later on we'll hit you with a three-parter. So
in a steel cage.
In a steel cage this Sunday. We'll be back.
Someday.
Gamer's Attic Attack! We have dice of every stripe, any color scheme and shape you can imagine. Exclusive dice, gold-plated dice, blank dice, label dice, cheat dice, D8 ability dice, crystal dice, time dice within dice, and jumbo foam dice for when you feel the inescapable urge to pelt your fellow players or annoying commercial announcers. And that's just a few of them! We sell enough dice to form a high-intensity plastic bridge from the Earth to the Moon. What's more, any order over $30 gets $3 off when you use the coupon code RADIO. Who wants a set?
I do.
Who else?
Me.
Anyone else?
Why are you ignoring me?
I'm not ignoring you. I'm cutting you off.
What?
You order a new set every day.
So?
Is there a 12-step program for diceaholics? Because you, sir, have a problem.
That's really strange of you to say.
Green frosted, red speckled, violet glitter, blue translucent. You couldn't say no to these beauties if you wanted to.
I'm not an addict. I could stop collecting marbles anytime I like.
Marbles? You haven't been buying marbles this whole time. You've been buying dice.
That explains why I keep losing the marbles tournament. Those 4- and 6-sided marbles aren't really all that great for rolling.
You're not only a dice junkie, you're dumb, son. Dumb.
So can I get a set?
What'll it hurt? Sure.
Woohoo! Marbles!
Remember, folks, use the coupon code RADIO to get $3 off any order over $30 at gamersattic.com.
Get the newest releases at RPG Now. Only at RPG Now can you get the absolute latest and best releases from fantastic publishers like Fat Dragon Games, Green Ronin Publishing, and Wizards of the Coast. There are new products every single day. Come to RPGNow.com and get them the instant they're available.
And today on the Gamer's Haven, we're talking about gaming and running games, playing
and
games.
Mafia Wars.
No Mafia Wars. It has nothing to do with Mafia Wars.
But there's a lot of people on it.
There is a lot of people on Mafia Wars, but it doesn't count as a role-playing game.
You take a role as a mafia, Don.
Jeremy, I'm going to stab you.
Just saying.
Stabbing.
fine. Well, you can do that in Mafia Wars, too. Right. So back to what we were talking about, right?
Yes. We're talking about lovely... You've already gotten us into enough trouble with your mouth, you know.
Hey, I got...
Tossing sailors off.
Yes, tossing sailors off first, and then throwing those insults at Great Britain.
Hey, it could have been any country. That was the last person we talked about.
We'll talk about this in Random Encounter.
Oh, okay. Because I have a whole rant about that.
Uh-huh. Right. Oh, great. Yeah, I'm just going to insert Smurf over everything you say now.
Oh, I won't curse. That's the thing.
No, we're just going to insert Smurf over the top of whatever you say anyways.
Oh, come on.
Today we're talking about gaming and running games and playing in games with small groups versus large groups. I know I've had... I think we've all done the solo adventure stuff where you run for one person, and some of us, when we first started out, we only had one player, and then that sort of grew to two players, and then maybe three players, and then we made it to high school or junior high or college or whatever, and it ballooned into more. I know the most I've ever run at a time has been 13 people at once. That was entertaining. But it's a challenge. It can go well. It can go poorly. But there are a few things you can try, a few things you can do that make it easier on you as a GM or make it easier on you as a player. Chief problem I see with gaming with a large group is really the party tends to split up more.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more.
When you're running with 13 people, you have, this group of, five people goes off one way, and this group of eight goes off another way. And then technically you're running two games at once.
Which sucks.
Yeah, yeah. Because we all know players will go out of their way to do whatever they want.
And to piss the GM off.
Well, if they're annoying players, yes.
If they're just doing it just because they want to have fun, that's different.
That doesn't bother me so much. I just hate it when players are like, well, we know the story is supposed to go this way, but just because we can, we're going to sit here and we're going to go do this. I hate that crap.
Yeah.
It makes for a very bad experience when you GM. And then they wonder why you don't want to run anything for them anymore.
That's true.
Like, why don't you want a game for us anymore? Let's see. Let me count the reasons why.
Well, I think the chief thing, obviously, is if you have a small group of people versus a large group of people, is you can be a bit more specialized. I mean, if you're running a solo group or if you're running, like, my Deadlands game is 3 to 4 people, typically. I definitely tailor that game a bit differently than, say, Jeremy would tailor his D&D game. Your most recent one that was running with what? 8 people? 9 people?
Something like that, yeah.
It is a... The more people you have in your game group for a game, the more you really need to sort of pick and choose who you want to play in it and sort of pick and choose how you want the game to go.
Yeah.
The thing I found when I was running a game for 13 people was there were a lot of people that did a lot of sitting around for most of the game, and really with that many people, it's not easy to sit there and focus on one player or one character or a group of characters. The problem I ran into was a lot of the players that did play in the game were just sort of there for the hack and slash, and so they really didn't participate much. So, I had about half the group that was there for the fights and then not there for the role-playing.
Which sucks. I hate when that crap happens.
Yeah, it can get kind of annoying, especially if you're not used to that, if it's not something you're expecting, or if you've tried to put stuff into the adventure for those characters.
And they just blow it off.
They just don't care. I know I, for one, get very annoyed when players really just ignore the hell out of what you're doing and go off and do something else. Especially if you've written a section of the game for their character and they just don't seem interested in it. Gets really annoying.
True.
Does not make for a happy GM. And when you're not a happy GM, well, you don't put as much effort into your game anymore.
Yeah.
Because you're like, why should I bother putting any effort into the game? They're just going to screw around with it and not actually do anything and just piddle away the time. It's like I'm wasting my evenings when I could be doing something else that would be more beneficial.
Yeah. I know with running a game with a lot of people, it's really, I think it boils down to is if you have a lot of friends and all these friends want to play a game, you sort of have to pick and choose as to who you want to play in the game that you're going to run.
The particular game, yeah.
Right, for the specific game. Like my Deadlands game, you know, I had I could have gone with, you know, 8, 9, 10 people if I really wanted to, but I really wanted to keep that game, you know, more small, more of an intimate group, you know, so 3 to 4 people and maximum. I mean, my comfort zone generally is between 4 and 6 people, max 8. It's harder to, it's with a lot of people, I just think it's harder to keep control of the game and to sort of keep everybody interested. With a smaller group, I'm much more of a fan of the smaller groups because that's what I grew up running, with small groups. I'm really happy with the small groups doing their, you know, really, they're a bit more focused on the game, they're a bit more focused on you as the GM, and God, that sounds horribly self-serving, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes it's got to be about you. You know, that's the thing that a lot of people won't want to say, but sometimes it's got to be about you getting the story out there, and if the players aren't willing to get the story out there, as yes, it does sound selfish, but the fact of the matter is what's the use in playing if you're not telling a story that the character's interacting with? They're just going to take the story and basically smurf all over it, then, you know, what do you expect?
Right.
You know, those are the people, I look at those people and go, well, I will never have that person in my gaming group again.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the most number of people you've run a game for as a campaign? I'm not talking convention gaming, anything like that. That's obviously a whole different beast.
35? Yeah, I ran an event for Kanar once, 35 people. Now, it was live action.
It's LARPing, right.
That's yeah, live action. But it still requires a lot of stuff to go on, and I didn't realize what all was in it, and Justin's like, go ahead, do it. And I'm like, okay. I came out of it going, wow, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
The most I've run for a pencil and paper game, I think, was...
Well, that's actually interesting, is
12.
You guys have done more of the live action role-playing stuff.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Than I have, obviously. I've done 2, and both experiences weren't the best.
It's all about the people.
You've actually run some. Did you ever run any? You've just played.
I didn't run the event. I helped, and I tried to help with some of the rules, but they didn't want, you know, to have actual rules. But
well, right. That's one of the problems with that setting that we were working with. The problem was a lot of the rule sets that were decided upon for that game was based on people's preferences, and so you saw a lot of favoring for people's classes who were GMs.
Kanar doesn't exist anymore, just so people know, really.
But yes, it does.
It shouldn't.
It's very small, but it still exists. And the thing was it was not a bad experience.
Why won't it die?
As long as the people you were dealing with were not being smurfholes.
Right. I mean, I had one experience with Kanar, and it was at the caves, and that was...
Unfortunately, that was not...
Yeah. That was one of the worst experiences I've ever had, where that guy threatened my life.
Uh-huh. Yes, I remember that, and then there was the guy that kept hitting Anthony in the throat. That was entertaining. So, yes, this is why I personally am not too fond of LARPers, or LARPing in general, so, you know. But, what's the main difference between running something in a LARP and running something at the table, though?
Well, one of the things is when you're running a LARP, you really do have to do a lot of running to keep up with everything. There's a hell of a lot more moving around. On top of that, it's also there's a lot more delegating. It's like, all right, you group right here, you three, you're going to be these things. You're going to attack the group. You're going to attack the group from this direction over here. Don't let them see you as long as you can before they get there. You're going to ambush them from over here because you're the monsters that they're looking for. You're the damsel that they're after. Blah blah blah. You go sit around that tree and stay out of sight and yell to where they can't see you, but they're going to be looking for you anyways. And then I'm going to sit back and make sure that everything doesn't fall to hell in a handbasket. And then you go with it. And mm-hmm. sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, because you have the same thing in a LARP that you have in a normal pencil and paper game, is mm-hmm. that there's some players that just want to smurf all over what they're doing.
Right.
And I just look at it and I go, why are you even playing if all you want to do is just smurf everything up?
Yeah. It sounds very similar to running a tabletop game with a lot of people, though.
Yeah, and many, many occasions when it comes down to it, when I've like the largest game I ran, which was 12 or 13 people, it was a vampire game, I stopped. I was like, all right, you guys, the plot's here. Here's the story, and you guys aren't going anywhere with it. You guys want to sit around and bitch and moan and whine.
With the more people there, the more likely that people are going to get distracted.
Yeah. Well, and you can't. It's really hard to work with 13 people at once.
Oh,
and
yeah.
In the end, I had an assistant, a person assisting me GMing.
You had a co-GM.
Somebody always gets left out because I couldn't do it by myself.
Yeah.
Somebody gets left out, and it's just not a good environment.
And the thing is, that's why it might be
better to split the group into two after you co-GM do one half and you do the other.
That's exactly what I ended up doing.
It's much more manageable that way.
But that's why I try to stick with groups of about five people now. Five people I can manage. Six people I can manage. Eight people, I'm pushing it.
Yeah.
And I know I can't do that many people. That's why you won't see me run any large games like that. It's like every year when Rowan comes up, she wants me to run a game when she comes up. And I'm happy to.
Right.
Well, not just Call of Cthulhu. I ran Call of Cthulhu this last year, just a game, because she doesn't get to game much. And Sam was here with his girlfriend. And then there was, you know, you were invited, and there was Andre. There was like nine people who wanted to play, and I had to start cutting and snipping because there was no way I could let everybody play.
Yeah,
you know, there was no way. I had six characters made up, and that was all that we're going to be able to play. And so some people came away pissed because they didn't get to play, and I was like, I'm sorry guys, but I can't run that many people. You know, Call of Cthulhu is one of those games that's very character centric. Anyways, you can't have a lot of characters.
It's definitely hard to tell some players that, no, you can't play in this game, I'm sorry, because I'm already filled up. Some people don't understand that. They sort of take it as a personal affront or a...
Yeah, that they think that you're picking on them.
Right.
And you look at it and you go, I'm not picking on you. I'm not singling you out. I'm not trying to be mean to you. It's just, I've hit my limit. I've hit the ends of my abilities, and I'm not going to push it any further. And that sounds mean, and it sounds selfish, and it sounds petty, but you know what? It's better to know your limits and to heed your limits than try to push it and then have everybody unhappy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what about you, Jeremy? How many is the most for you?
Well, I think my most right now is what I'm running in Thoth. And probably my next game will be smaller.
Right, right. And how many you got in Thoth right now? There's... Let's see, 1, 2, 10, 12, 14.
A lot.
There's a lot.
Yeah, Becca and I dropped out because there was just so many people.
Nine or ten people.
Yeah, Becca and I dropped out.
We had to pull out the extra chairs and the extra table, if I remember right.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, and I don't know if I'm going to have that many in my next one, just because the paperwork gets too much. The nice thing is, if you're missing someone...
Yeah, if everyone shows up, I think it's about 10 people.
Yeah. If you're missing someone, it doesn't really matter.
Which is an awful lot.
It is, because you're going to miss out on people, or you know something's going to happen.
I don't know. Me as a GM, I want to make sure everyone's having fun.
Right.
Is at least you know somewhat entertained by the game. And nothing annoys me more when people are sitting around and picking their nose. Or reading books. Or yeah. It's like, pay attention to the damn game, please.
I don't mind if they're reading, as long as once something that... They have to be at least paying some attention.
Yeah.
And once it's definitely them...
Oh,
we have music. And once it's... the game starts to get to a dramatic point or something like that, they need to pay attention. Also, if they're reading books just randomly and they miss something important, I'm less likely to actually help them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more likely just to be like, hey, you don't know. You're obviously not paying attention.
Right.
But I don't know. I'm thinking I'll probably go back to six.
Yeah, I'd love to join your Thunder Rift game, but the thing is if you have as many people in the next game, there's no way I can do it. I just, with that many people, one of the things was, is it was uncomfortable because I didn't know a lot of the people.
That's the other thing. It's the comfort level, too.
Yeah. The more people you have.
Not only space. You know, you have to have enough space for those people to be comfortably able to game. But it's also, you know, maybe some people don't like that having that many players in their game. And not talking the GM not liking it, maybe it's the player doesn't like it. You know, and you could lose players that way. I'm a firm believer in keeping the numbers down to a manageable lot. For me, it's about six people. And choosing the people, you know, cherry pick the people for the specific game you're going to run. You know, I mean, there are some games that I'm like, I know players that are perfect for, and then there are some games I'm like, yeah, that friend's great, but he doesn't play this game like, he doesn't like this game as much. Mm-hmm. He doesn't play this game.
It's
that
like
great.
It's one of the reasons why I don't send any invites to Jeremy for Call of Cthulhu. His first experience was very, very bad, and he doesn't like the game because of it. I don't blame him for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had bad experiences with games, and I've never gone back and played those games ever. Doesn't matter if the game system itself was solid and great. I'm not going to do it, and I'm not going to force anybody else to do it.
Yeah, and speaking of that, is there are certain game systems that lend themselves more to large groups versus smaller groups.
Yeah, like Paranoia. Yeah. Paranoia, the more people you get in Paranoia, the zanier, wackier,
Paranoia,
and crazy
you can
have, it gets.
You know, 10 people and probably play the game relatively easily.
If you guys are lucky enough to get out of the requisitions weapons room.
You're lucky enough to actually make it past mission.
Warhammer in a large area where you have multiple tables lends
that
itself
would be
well.
Great fun.
Yeah, that's miniatures gaming, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but still,
if we had like
gaming,
if I had the space to put like four tables in the basement to have four games running at once.
I don't put miniatures gaming and wargaming in the same vein as running a game as a GM. There's really not nearly as much prep that you need to do.
So,
yes, miniatures games in and of themselves need larger space.
But what would be cool...
But what I'm saying is more people, too.
No, it would be cool for running like a campaign war game where you had like four tables to be able to do it.
Yeah,
having
yeah.
four consecutive games running at the same time that actually affect each other in such a way to move
consecutive games. That's not one big game. You see what I'm saying?
Maybe it's four separate sides of the same conflict, the same battle.
That could happen, yes.
That requires some huge
armies.
What
I'm saying is, as... Running a game as a GM, running a tabletop game that's not Warhammer, not a miniatures game, is really, I think, a bit more involved.
Well,
story-wise, especially. I mean,
Cougar up at KU,
right.
They had a huge D&D like group going.
Uh-huh.
I want to say 12 people.
Yeah, it was huge.
And right. It was like this special club you could not get into.
Uh-huh. I remember...
It was
my
irritating.
Brother was in it, and I wanted to try to get in, and one, they wouldn't let people in who weren't going to KU at the time, and two, once my brother graduated and once I went to KU, I couldn't find them anywhere.
Oh, well, the problem was getting into
Cougar...
Because
they didn't have any official offices, they didn't have anyone to contact.
Getting into Cougar as a group was easy, really, once you knew where they were. It was actually playing in the D&D game. That's where the problem came in, because it was kind of like this elite group. The rest of us would get stuck either running our own or playing board games and stuff like that. But there was a ridiculous number of people. Half the time they'd be having the side conversations that are just... Because after a while, people are just going to be like, well, there's no action over here.
Right.
I'm going to converse about something. So, I don't know. Big groups can be fun for a while, but after a while they just become draining on the GM, and the paperwork involved isn't worth it. You can't focus. I've given up on my Thoth character stuff. I just kind of they'll either take care of it or they won't.
I found myself doing the same thing when I was running a 13-player D&D game. You know?
Yeah, it's just too much paperwork.
It's like, I can't if I focused on every character enough, that would be the whole night, you know?
Right.
And nothing would get done. So, I mean, I like smaller groups because it's a bit cozier, it's a bit more intimate, it's a bit more, you can be a bit more focused on certain characters. I think you can write adventures and run adventures that are a bit more, a bit more personalized.
Well, yeah, and
you know,
that's why, live action RPGs are different, but because usually the size... You want more people because you don't have... You need the vast quantities of people so you can have NPCs. You're running around, you can't play all the NPCs yourself. It doesn't happen. Not to mention, in a live action, it's a lot more difficult to say, all right, well, you see all these people milling about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where are they? Well, if I have a larger group of people, I can have them milling about someplace.
Right.
You know, around the table, you can kind of... I think your imagination is a little bit more...
Well, that's the whole point of a tabletop game, is to use your imagination. You know? So, yes,
but
in a tabletop environment, it's a great idea to have an imagination. You don't need much anything else. But, like in a live-action role-playing game, yes, you need all those excess people who are just milling about because you got to have someone to pinpoint. There's the milling army of zombies.
Right.
All 50 of them. Have fun, guys.
Yeah. Well, back to the certain games. I mean, Paranoia is a good game for a large group of people.
Yes.
On the flip side, I think small groups of people. I think Call of Cthulhu is great for smaller groups.
Well, the thing with Call of Cthulhu, the smaller the group, the more intense the more tense the atmosphere is, mm-hmm. because the less people you have in Call of Cthulhu, the less people you have watching your back, and the less eyes you have looking right. outward, which means that that's all the more places for that creepy crawler, horrifying thing to come out of the darkness and eat you. Yeah. The more tense the situation is in Call of Cthulhu, the better the game will run. Mm-hmm. The reason for that being is you're supposed to be terrified. You're supposed to not want to look down that dark tunnel because you know there's something bad down there, but you know you have to. You have no choice. You know, you have to solve the murder mystery or figure out what's causing the children to disappear in town. You have to. You don't want to. It's like in real life. There are times and there are things that you have to do mm-hmm. that you don't want to do at all. Same thing with Call of Cthulhu. And the more you have that feeling, that ambiance, the better the game feels overall for people. People eat that up.
I think a versatile game is something like Dungeons & Dragons, which I think plays both sides fairly well. A small to mid-sized group, I think, better than a large. It all depends on the type of D&D game you're running. If you're running a kick down the door and kill the monsters game, you can have 20 people and probably be able to, you know, satisfy most things. But if you're running a more role-playing or political heavy game, I think the smaller the group, the better.
Well, Tolis is a good size group.
Yeah, we got 6 people though. I mean, I think that's about a mid-size right there.
You don't need much more than that. You can take on most, you know, groups of critters.
Yeah,
you get above that, and it gets kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't it like the challenge ratings were designed for groups of 4 to 5 people of that?
In third edition, it's groups of four. It's groups of 4 characters. In fourth edition, they raised that, I believe, to 5.
Yeah, but it's fairly easy to modify.
Yeah,
because it's just you have so much XP, mm-hmm. and you just buy your monsters out of that XP.
Where's the water bottle?
Our Hellcats are being crazy again. But really, not a whole heck of a lot more to say about the subject. I prefer the small groups, smaller groups. 6 is my comfort zone. What about you guys?
Small to mid.
I prefer 4 to 5 people is my preference, which is about what most of my games run right about now. But I can do 6. 6 is as high as I want to go to remain comfortable. And for Call of Cthulhu, I won't go above 5. Because above 5 people, there's so many people milling about trying to look for clues and stuff. Someone's going to get left out because you guys have to split up to investigate.
Yep, split parties.
Yep.
They all die eventually.
A lot of times they do.
Or at least one of them gets eaten by a giant tentacle monster.
At least one. Right.
Well, I think that's it for the discussion. We've got more stuff coming your way with the 3-parter and with some random encounters. So stay tuned.
Pleasure for you to stop by. I'm Sir Hercule Gaston. If you'd like a PDF for your lovely RPG collection, go to rpgnow.com. Don't just go there now. Or go there through canadiancrusaders.com or vorpalnetbook.com. What affiliates you know. It's absolutely smashing. Cheerio!
Vorpal Network and the Gamers Haven proudly present 1,000 Monkeys production of a Monty Cook adventure. Tolis, the Night of Dissolution. An adventure for Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition. Following the threads of a hidden conspiracy, 6 heroes find themselves up against insane cultists, wild chaos magic, and horrors from the primordial days of the world. Urban intrigue, dungeon exploration, and high action span the grand city of Tolis, the city by the spire. Join these heroes as they explore a former brothel, the laboratory of the dreaded Surgeon in Shadows, and even secret temples of chaos cults. Can these intrepid adventurers stave off the Night of Dissolution, a dark time long foretold when the slumbering lords of chaos will awaken in their hidden lairs deep below Tolis? and bring catastrophe to the world?
We're back with the lovely three-parter today, and on the three-parter today we've got Jeremy with a rant slash rave. He says it's a commentary. I'm betting it's going to be more of a rant. Nathan's got a review.
It has something to do with a random encounter.
Oh, great. Thanks, Jeremy. The next segment you're just going to hear lots of Smurfs. It's Jeremy. No, Jeremy can say anything he wants.
Can it be the China but, of the board of
three-parter? That's true. I mean, I am entirely the editor, so I can do what I want. And I've got character today, so we're going to go ahead and start with Jeremy's lovely rant.
The rant.
I've hit the buttons now. Now we're recording. You see the little lines going up and down?
No. I can't see the lines.
Okay. Well, start speaking and ranting. See? Ooh.
So anyway.
So beginneth the smurfing.
A few episodes ago, episode 36, I must have been in a very bad mood because I randomly decided to insult all of England. I don't know why. If our last person we talked to was from Australia, I would have insulted Australia. Who knows? But we got some hate mail. I don't think it's real hate mail. I think it's joke hate mail. But I appreciate the hate mail.
All right. Do you want me to read some of this hate
Sure.
mail? Okay. This isn't really hate mail. This is from our good friend, Eighth Pagan.
Yeah.
We all know this is tongue-in-cheek. But here he said, let's see... How to find it.
I have it right here.
Oh, if you've got it, read it.
Right. Do you want me to read the top portion or just...
Just the portion that is pertinent to what you're talking about.
As to some of the other comments, he says, I think you'll find that America was our colony. We left once we had dumped all of that worthless and wretched over there. Right.
They were called Protestants.
Yeah. So... That's fascinating.
I'm just being historically accurate.
He goes on to say, you know, quatloos are probably worth more than the pound right now. Not really an insult.
No.
Probably true.
That's insulting the pound, though. The pound's worth a lot more than
American
dollars.
I did not say that.
So it's I mean, we all know that the pound's worth a heck of a lot more than the American dollar.
Right. And always wondered why there's so...
I've adjusted down since then, but I really don't care.
Right. Always wondered why there are so many zombie films set in America. Was not aware that there was much in the line of brains to eat over there. Well,
there was a 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later.
Right, yeah, right. That did happen in England.
Those are both in England, yeah.
Yeah, and the zombie movies.
I was going to point out something to do with the colony, though. You didn't leave.
We forced you out.
We kicked you out. We got tired of you hanging around, and we went, you got to leave.
And we dumped tea into the
We dumped a bunch of tea, because we don't drink tea.
Stuff.
Which I don't understand.
And then we kicked your butt. We also have a very nice dental program.
We do?
So
we
do. Britain now, jackass.
Yes, but Britain has national health care.
But on the other side of things, they have national
that one.
They have national health care, that's right. And they also have Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah. And Torchwood.
So I got to say,
Doctor Who more early,
I really do like Great Britain and England. I mean, even though we did win... And multiple times, we always swoop in there, save our friends.
Yeah, at the last
multiple
minute, like
wars.
The Calvary, we watched way too many westerns.
Hey, this is my commentary.
It is his commentary.
Yeah, it's true.
Now, your thing on the brains and zombies, well, actually zombies, and you really should read the Zombie Survival Guide, has nothing to do with brains. It's all about just flesh. So, yeah, there aren't any brains in America. There aren't any brains anywhere else. I mean, humanity is brainless.
Yeah, but we are the most abused country in the world. So we've got all the flesh.
We yep. That's correct. We that do. Is, we are the fattest in the world.
That is why zombie movies are always, made for America.
Right.
Because we have the most
flesh. We have the most flesh.
And that's why all the zombie movies, all the zombies move fast now, because we're so heavy, overweight, we can't run away, so the zombies catch us all
true.
That much
right.
faster.
So I thought of a bunch of different things to say, both insulting and otherwise, and I decided, there's no point. But we do appreciate 8th Pagan. We appreciate everybody listening. And I'll insult another country later on. It's just going to happen.
Canada. No, wait. We like
Canada's
Canada.
Cool.
Yeah, I kind of like Canada.
Herzegovania.
It'll just be a random country. I don't know.
Herzegovania.
We'll have somebody from someplace.
I don't think that's his name now, but...
Oofters.
Yeah, who knows. But it's going to happen. And, you know, I don't care. I can say whatever the hell I want.
That's true. He can. And does.
I do. Often. Play Mafia Wars on Facebook. It's fun.
Thank you for that outstanding endorsement.
You're welcome.
The review.
And I think now Nathan is going to give us a nice review.
Yes. Well, I don't know if I'd say it would be nice.
What are you reviewing?
I am reviewing The Arkham Horror, because we actually finally sat down and played a game.
How long ago did you buy the game?
I've heard the first part of The Arkham Horror since the game came out.
Yeah.
I bought it at release at Gen Con.
You could tell we made it a high priority to play that one. Yeah, I still have a Fantasy Flight board game we haven't played, so.
Yeah, let's just put it this way. We pulled out the board shortly after I bought
it
and got everything set up.
Anymore. Anyway.
We pulled the game out about, 2 months after I bought it. It was the first time we had a chance to play it. Pulled the board out, got it all set up, and got everyone ready to play it. Started reading the rules, and all got confused and went, let's play something else.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Because, there was enough people of us there. There were 6 people that were trying to play, and we hadn't read the rules thoroughly yet. And so we're looking at it going, how do you fight? I give up. Let's quit and play something else. But we finally sat down, read all the rules. Then we put the board together. And in the interim, since buying The Arkham Horror,
check out our Facebook page. If you go to our front page at CanadianCrusaders.com, there's a Facebook badge. Click on that to go to our page. Look at our photo gallery on there. You can see a picture of the complete board after it was set up.
Okay. The table in our dining room is probably 7 foot long. With the board completely put together, I'm still missing one of the board expansions, too. I don't have the Kingsport expansion. So it's just the Dunwich and the Innsmouth. So I only had 2 of the 3 board expansions, and it took up almost the entire table.
Almost the whole thing,
yeah. We were out of space to put cards and to put everything else, because there's like 40 decks of cards.
Yep.
That's an exaggeration. There's actually, I think
there's 20. A lot.
There's like 20
there's
or 22.
About 20.
Yeah, there's a lot of cards in the game, different sizes.
You separate all, absolutely separate all the decks, you're probably looking at 25 to 30.
Yeah, a lot of different cards, and they all go to different things.
Mm-hmm.
So setup for the game actually takes a long time, which is no big deal considering the game takes a long time. There were 3 of us playing, and we started at 10:30. And by the end, there were 2 of us playing because one of us had decided to go to sleep.
Nope.
And we finally managed to eke a victory out. There was like, what was the Doom track? It was like 12 out of 14. And... there was 2 of us left.
Sounds about right, yeah.
And there was 1 gate left that needed to be closed. Ethan managed to pull it off with his 1 knowledge die to get a success and close the gate, then use his 5 clue tokens to seal the gate, get the 6th mythos sign, and win. But we were 2 points away from having Azathoth, who's one of the elder guys that can come
out, if he shows
appear,
up, you die.
And the world just dies when that happens, so you automatically lose. So we were busting our chops, and that ended at 2:45 in the morning.
Yep.
So this is one of those games that, whereas
don't start playing at 11 o'clock at night.
Whereas I like it, if you're going to play it late, best be prepared to set the board, take pictures of everything, and go to bed
or
and come back and play it
later. Or set it up in a place where you don't need to take it down.
Yeah. Because otherwise, you're never going to finish.
And get started setting it up an hour before you're supposed to play.
Yeah.
Early.
If everybody's coming over to play, set the board up early.
I mean, it is, once we got it set up and once we got playing and figured out more of the rules, it's a
fun
game.
It's really
a good,
fun.
There's a reason they've made several expansions for it and it sells out every time. It's a good game.
It's just, it's expensive.
It is an expensive one. I mean, you can just get the main set. I mean, and the main set's 70, 60, 70 now?
70. It's $69.99.
Yeah. And it's a good game. It's a good game. It's I like...
cooperative games like that.
Yeah, so, everybody's against the board.
You're going against the game, and I like that type of a game where you're all working together. So, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
I did too. But it is a long game. Mm-hmm. If you're going to play it, be sure you set aside a lot of time. The more players you have, the longer the game's going to take. With all the expansion boards, I think you can play like 12 people. With 12 people playing that board game, that's going to take an hour to do a single turn.
It's going to take quite some time, yes.
And then on top of that, you know, the thing is the first, what was it, the first, God, the first four turns of the game, run-throughs of like Mythos turns and stuff, man, all we did was run. Because we couldn't fight any of the monsters. We had no weapons. It was like, oh, I got a fight of two. The monster takes away two dice. I lose immediately, and I lose how many life? Crap, running for the hills.
Run away. But,
yeah, it's pretty much true to form on that part of the Cthulhu mythos, is that the monsters are almost impossible to defeat. But once you finally start getting your character built up, it gets a little bit easier. But unless you get really lucky with your random draw cards, you're not going to fight right out the gate.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few things I'd say is I think they should give you more dice than they do. They only give you, what, 6d6?
They give you 5 dice.
5d6.
And at the end, we were rolling... Well, at the end, for combat, we were rolling, like, 12 in various different things.
The game in and of itself isn't perfect. It's a good game. I liked it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I would give the game one thumb up. I wouldn't give it two thumbs up because it wasn't, you know, awe-inspiring. Yeah. Two thumbs up is awe-inspiring.
I think with 4 people, you know, again, you know, not 12 people, but, you know,
I think
4 or 5 people, I think would be a good number for that game.
Would be a good game to play. But as Ethan said, setup takes about an hour before people come over. Make sure everybody's willing to play and has something to do in the interim between their turns, because at like 5 or 6 people, you're going to be waiting a little bit of time. Because it takes probably a good 4 or 5 minutes per player per turn, and that's if they're moving fast. If they don't know what they're going to do, it takes a lot longer.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Sounds like Risk.
Yeah, it is a lot like Risk, only with monsters.
Only not crappy like Risk.
Oh,
Risk Godstorm?
Risk Godstorm is cool. Regular Risk.
Boring. I don't think Regular Risk is crappy, but I guess...
I think Regular Risk is boring, but that's just me. Really, the only Risk I've ever played, though, is Lord of the Rings Risk. And
well,
you didn't play Godstorm?
No, okay, I did play Godstorm. That's right. Godstorm won bad, but anyway.
But anyways, good game. I give it one thumbs up. Don't give it two thumbs up. Maybe with more players, it'd be a two thumbs up game. The pluses for the game, I would say, are everybody's against the board. Mm-hmm. It's cooperative for all the players. Nobody's out to kill everybody, anybody else. I mean, you can backstab other people if you want.
If you want to lose, yeah.
You want to die. Yeah.
But there's no reason to.
But it does a good job of capturing that Call of Cthulhu Lovecraftian feel, I think.
Minuses on the game, I would say, would be the long setup time.
Yep.
A large board with a large setup space is required.
Especially if you have the expansions, it takes up so much space.
Let's just put it this way. The next time we play it, I hope to have the Kingsport expansion by that point. We do that, it's going to be played on the table in the back room, which is 8 foot by 4 foot, because that's the only way we're going to have enough space. Other minuses I would say is that it's a long time between turns, even with small groups. Because turns take time to do. So, you know, be prepared for players to get bored in the interim between their turns. So you have something like... We had a movie playing in the background.
Well, once you get the hang of it, the turns go a lot faster. Because you're just ready to go, okay, I need to do this. Because you could sit there and plan out what you're going to do.
Yeah, until the monsters move and then screw everything up.
That's true, but...
That's like, oh, crap, now I have to go around that spot. So I'm going to have to move my movement instead of moving it to a 3. I'm going to have to move it all the way up to the top to a 4.
Like many of the Fantasy Flight games, it's when you sit down to read the rules, it's very intimidating. The best way to do it is to read the rules and then to sit down and just play a game.
Yeah.
Whether it's just by yourself or with other people, it's the best way to figure out how to do it.
That's another plus for the game. The game can be played single player.
Yeah.
I don't know how fun that would be, but it can be played single player.
Well, if you're really bored and have nothing to do.
Yeah.
The power goes out.
Yeah, or you live in North, like, you know, North Pole.
Yeah, or if you live, you know, in England, where you have nothing to do.
What are you talking about?
I'm just trying to feed Jeremy here.
They probably have, don't they, like, have tea time?
Which reminds me, we need a good Doctor Who board game. Anyway,
we don't have crumpets? Any Doctor Who.
What are they?
There are a few, but they all suck.
Strumpets. Crumpets?
Crumpets, dude. Strumpets are like chicks.
So Arkham
strumpets are
oh, prostitutes.
Right. Arkham right. Horror.
No,
anyway.
Not necessarily, but
tea and prostitutes.
Yeah, no.
Arkham Horror.
Arkham Horror.
What?
Definitely a good game. Check it out. If your local game shop does a board game thing,
yes.
See if someone will bring it in. Try it out there before you buy it. It is expensive.
Yeah.
It is worth every penny I paid for it, but it is expensive.
Yeah. I mean, I'll play it again. I'll play it again.
And I'm sure Becca will play it.
I might play that.
Yeah, and I think actually you'd probably...
As
probably
a get a board kick out of game, it. I would yeah. probably play it.
You'd probably get a kick
as
out of it.
As a, you know, role RPG, you already know.
Yeah. We're going to have to do an episode soon on board games, I'm thinking. So.
Yeah.
But that's Arkham Horror.
Have we taken time to pimp our local gaming store, though?
Let's take this moment to pimp our local gaming store.
Oh, yes. We love our local gaming store.
I was there recently.
Tabletop
it
Game
was
and Hobby.
Packed.
Really?
Yeah. It
excellent.
Was great. I was happy.
Did we mention that it's called Tabletop Game and Hobby?
Yes, Tabletop.
And it's on 103rd and Metcalf in Kansas City, or in Overland Park, Kansas, technically.
Yes. I was actually greeted, my wife and I were actually greeted by the individual at the front. She's like, how are you?
Yeah, that would be...
See you again.
What's her name?
It's technically at 6840 West 105th Street in Overland Park, Kansas, 66212.
Right. You should go buy
stuff there. TabletopGameandHobby.com or at 913-962-4263.
You should order something. Buy something.
I don't think he has an online store anymore.
I don't care.
He doesn't have one.
Drive down here and buy something.
Yes.
If you come into the Kansas City area and you're visiting, please stop by Tabletop Game and Hobby and peruse our local game store. You will not be disappointed.
Anyway, that's Arkham Horror and our local gaming store.
Yes.
We've got character. All right. We haven't done a We've Got Character segment in a while, so I'm going to give it a shot. In my Deadlands game, characters ran across a character named Curly. Curly? and Jeremy is shaking his head. Curly is a Mexican. Morbidly obese Mexican that only has one leg. Oh, and he drives a steam wagon that has a Gatling gun mount on it.
Boy,
as well.
Did.
He did drive it until it blew up, yes. The way I designed this character is, well, lost his leg, is a bit loco, and, yeah, just likes blowing stuff up, really. That's why he had a bandolier of dynamite. So, we have Curly, who obviously has toughness out the yin-yang, who's a very tough guy, because he's had one leg blown off or torn off or whatever, what have you.
And where in the weird
and
West,
is morbidly obese.
I think he chewed it off.
He may have chewed it. He may have eaten it because he got hungry one day. Who knows? Curly, the way I designed Curly is a just... originally, I was going to have him be another Indian, but I was like, no, we'll make him be Mexican. A big, fat, bald Mexican. And I was looking at the edges and the hindrances going, I want someone who has a ridiculously high toughness because, you know, people are getting shot a lot and, you know, die in horrible ways. I was like, okay, let's see hindrances. And, oh, obese. Yeah, I can make a morbidly obese guy. Okay, we'll do that. Da, 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 da. One leg, you know, one-arm bandit. Hey, I could take away a leg. That'd be awesome. And then I got it in my head to get, this guy loves Ghost Rock tech stuff. So I'm like, okay, he loves Gatling technology. So he had a Gatling pistol and a Gatling shotgun. Drove around in a steam wagon with a steam Gatling gun. And I also decided I went through the old Smith and Robards book and found the hat gun. So he had a big hat on that had a gun inside of it, and which he could fire off by using the pull strings.
We now have his hat gun.
You know, they now have all of his stuff. They actually managed to capture him without killing him, which was not hard to do because his toughness was an 11. Which yes, is higher than Little Bear.
You mean it wasn't easy to do? It was hard to catch him.
It was hard. It was very hard to catch him, yes. In fact, he got munched on by some shadow monsters the other night and didn't die. Just they had to munch on him for several turns to actually, you know, wound him. But yes, Curly, really an insane Mexican. You can have him be an alien, whatever you want. But an insane driver of some big contraption.
Gun-toting maniac.
Gun-toting, like... picture like covered in soot with these goggles. I was sort of inspired a bit by Kang from Jade Empire, you know, so just crazy, and of course had one leg and was morbidly obese. I'm always a fan of putting these of making a character like that that's just got all this random crap. Makes him a bit more memorable. So, yeah, that's Curly, and I used him in Deadlands. You can hear him on the Deadlands actual play, actually. So,
do we have a how many listeners do we have for that?
Two? I don't know. I could check.
1 million.
Anyway, that's Curly.
Hello, this is Big Ben, owner of Big Ben's Burgers, of course the lovely home of the Haggis Burger. And if you want a PDF for your RPG collection, I'd say go to rpgnow.com and check out some fine, fine products. Of course, if you go there, try to go there through canadiancrusaders.com or vorpalnetwork.com. And once you do so, you'll get a free Haggis Burger on me.
Gamers Haven and the Vorpal Network, in association with Pinnacle Entertainment Group, present. A Thousand Monkeys Production.
Deadlands. Enough room to die.
An actual play recording of Deadlands Reloaded. Available for download at www.canadiancrusaders.com.
This is the Vorpal Network.
We have some lovely random encounters for you today, and actually we have quite a few, so I'm going to go ahead and jump to the bottom of the list here and start with the first one we got on May 13th. If you've been listening to the show, we had some emails from a Joe McJoe last time talking about the Savage Worlds and the Deadlands game. We helped him out with telling him about some Savage Worlds stuff and sort of enlightening him about Deadlands. Well, he emailed us back just to say thanks for the help. You mentioned on the Deadlands podcast that your brother was to be married, so no worries about the time. I was a little late getting back to him, and yes, my brother got married.
Yay!
Best wishes to him and his bride, especially if he is the quote-unquote carpetbagger. Well, technically, I have the honor of being the original carpetbagger. I just call Eric the carpetbagger all the time because it's funny. Because no one really knows what it means. Anyway, he wanted to know, how lethal is Savage Worlds? It seems to be very forgiving, but combat can be dangerous. How do you create a good fight? Levelless systems can be horrible to design in a good fight without it being impossible. Take care, and thanks for the help. And the thing you have to understand if you're listening to the Deadlands actual play is the hand-to-hand combat in Deadlands is much more deadly. Is deadlier than in the regular Savage World system. They use a modified system to make it a bit nastier. Because damage is open ended in Savage Worlds and in Deadlands, it can be very lethal. And Eric pointed this out is
I've had some spells go off that were just nasty.
The thing is if you have access to a healer,
yeah,
that golden hour is crucial to your game group. Is that hour after combat when they can be healed, when they can be patched up? I think I'm a little easy on you guys as far as healing. Because I don't want you guys to be, you know, cripples in wheelchairs for 3 weeks while you're healing up.
Well, it's
up.
Boring at that point.
Exactly.
Except for my character who's got permanent...
Except for you who has mangled legs and walks around with a cane now.
Not yet. Don't have a cane yet, but I'll need one.
You'll need one, yes. I believe your
Did
pace
you
is now...
Did you listen to the last
pace is now
podcast?
No, I have not listened to it yet, but Ethan was filling me in on it. I was like, I told him not to deal with the devil for me anymore because he always gets me killed.
No, you didn't die.
Almost.
You almost died. But no, I mean, obviously, there you go. And actually, I use Hero Lab for creating the characters and creating my NPCs and stuff. And actually, it has a built-in level system, which tells you what level the monster is after you're done. And I'm routinely putting you guys up against legendary stuff. But really, I think... I am a carpetbagger. But you guys are always making it through them, but I'm also not doing all the nasty things I could be doing with them. I put them out there because I think they're I put the things in there because they're appropriate to be there and not because you're the right level to fight them. You can always run away. You guys are smart enough to run away.
Smart?
Yes, I know. It's terrible.
You're confusing us with another group, I think.
Oh, well, there is that. But I think making designing a good fight out of Savage Worlds is part just where the fights are set, and everyone has to be comfortable with the rules because there's really a lot in there that you have to know. Like, people are now realizing that cover's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. We're just going to crouch all the time.
Yes, all the time. You were always walking around and crouching.
It's just safer that way.
That's true. But really, that's how I handle my level. That's how I handle building the fights for Savage Worlds.
She's looking at Evie, who's like wrapped up in my belt and having a grand old time of
good.
It.
We also received an email from Chris Turner. I said, "Hi, just listened to your segment on PDFs and thought you'd like to know. I found this out from a friend who works at WotC in sales. He told me that WotC started off the PHB 2 torrent, so they could judge to see if they would stop doing PDFs, so they put the PHB 2 on a few of the major torrent sites to see how fast and how many people were going to download it. So they gave themselves a reason to stop the PDFs. This is also the reason why they're not going to sue the major torrent sites or try to have them shut down." Well,
everybody tries to sue them.
The torrent sites technically aren't doing anything to violate law.
The people who are uploading the torrents are, but the fact of the matter is going after them is almost impossible. It's like the whole red herring thing. We can't go after who the serious issue is, so we'll go after whoever we can get our hands on.
I'll say this. I mean, this is unsubstantiated. I mean, we haven't heard anything official on this.
And
I mean,
we won't,
so
because
I strongly doubt that WotC did that.
I do, too.
But, you know, whatever. It's done at this point. And he says, "Oh, tell Jeremy that his game room looks like it's coming together great, and keep hearing about those other games everybody else plays. And I wish to ask you to podcast those as well." Well, we are. We're now a game. Every time I'm at least in a game, I record it. So I have nothing else to listen to but lots of Mexican music or boring old country music, which makes me want to shoot somebody. So I listen all your podcasts and long playlists to entertain me at work. Thanks for all the podcasts. P.S. So you know, I live in Texas, and you have two fans. So
yay, two fans! I've been in Texas.
Chris,
yeah, I understand the whole country music thing, though. Yes. Country music—that's the reason why the United States is violent.
Thanks for emailing us, Chris. If you wanted to give your friend in WotC our email address, we'd love to hear from him.
We could always use a spy.
We will definitely keep it anonymous. But I highly doubt that.
But
that Wizards of the Coast would post their own torrent on several of the
pirate sites,
see what would go. It just, that seems so highly unlikely. Now, that doesn't mean that it didn't happen, but
WotC makes a history of making stupid decisions, but, you know, who knows? Who knows at this point? So, thanks again for the email, Chris. I'm glad to know that we have two fans. We have one fan in Britain and one fan in Texas.
That's awesome. We have someone who's a fan across
Texas?
The pond.
We've already made fun of Texas.
We've made fun of most of the United States, and
we make
here.
Fun of everything.
Anyway, we received another email from
Texas.
Not from Texas.
Sad.
This is not from anyone named. I'm not really going to give out their email, their Gmail address. So, I rather enjoy your all's actual play podcast. I was also wondering if you're going to do a Thunderspire Labyrinth adventure like you did on Keep on the Shatterfell. So far, this has been my favorite to listen to, with the Wizards College coming up a close second. However, these are basically the only two I've listened to so far anyway. Continue to listen to more as I travel and continue to be entertained. As of right now, Keep on the Shadowfell is the only pre-generated WotC adventure that we've done. We did do the Dungeon Crawl Classics adventure, Cell Swords of Punjar.
God.
As you can tell, that didn't go so well.
How many people died in that game?
We have. I've talked with my brother a little bit here and there about it, and one theory that you know, we'd like. I for one wouldn't mind doing the all of the Shadowfell adventures, Keep on the Shadowfell, Thunder Spiral Labyrinth, all those. I think Trollhunt Warrens is the third one. I can't remember. One of the ideas I had was Eric obviously ran Keep on the Shadowfell. Either me or Jeremy could run Thunder Spiral Labyrinth, and then whichever one of us didn't could run the third part.
Yeah, just split
would be
it up.
And keep the characters, you know, keep all the characters as much as possible. But it's an idea. We'd like to at some point, but as of right now, it's not in the immediate future. But thanks for listening to the actual play. I love getting emails like that. So, Then of course we have our resident correspondent in Great Britain, the Eighth Pagan,
excellent,
who's just listened to episode 36, and by now you've bought the miniatures from Black Tree Designs. Never heard of them personally, but I only buy miniatures occasionally, and I have not done any mass battles for years.
Still haven't gotten them.
They're cool. Warhammer 2nd Edition from way back in 1984, which included a scenario called the Magnificent Seven. Back then the figures were all metal, and I used to cast my own from molds made by Prince August.
Jeremy, don't you still have that adventure, the Magnificent Seven, for Warhammer?
No.
Oh, it's Chris that has that.
Chris might have it.
And then he goes on to talk about Jeremy's lovely comments, which Jeremy already dealt with earlier.
I thought I was polite.
Yeah, and we haven't gotten all of our stuff from Black Tree Design, so...
Bit annoyed by that. Just a bit.
Jeremy's annoyed by it. I mean, I got what I wanted, which was just some, like, Karen raids and stuff, so, you know. He also emails and said, "Hi, my last email might have seemed intended to offend. It was not. You do not have to take into account that I am English. If you are interested, Steve Kinson was interviewed on Meanwhile, the superhero podcast, and he gives me the link for him.
Offend?
No. We're in Kansas. You can't offend us.
We're in Kansas. Revolution is banned, and the monkeys are in charge.
Holy crap!
And he says if he starts getting hate mail from colonial listeners, he'll have to reply and correct all of their spelling to real English.
Thank you.
Whoever created the first American dictionary was a terrible speller.
Well, that's true. We can't
yes,
spell.
Yes, you know, probably. Please note, English is capitalized. American is not.
Well, it is American English.
Yeah, and you misspelled. American. And you misspelled capitalized. You put an S in there. Sorry, dude.
You can't. Now you can't.
Correct. No. It is not the proper English way to spell it. I don't care. The proper American way to spell it.
America.
It should have gone through the American filter.
Well, unfortunately...
No.
That's not what I'm talking about.
That would take English and lowercase it and American and capitalize it.
The whole thing about English and American, English being capitalized and American not being
America.
Capitalized, that's actually not necessarily true. Depending on the actual connotation of the use of the word American, American is indeed capitalized, especially when it's dealing with the description of the people. So... His statement that American is not always capitalized is not necessarily true.
I think
now,
he was not capitalizing it in order to try to insult us. Well, you failed.
We can't be insulted because we don't care.
We endured 8 years of George W. Bush. We cannot be insulted.
I mean,
it's really, we've heard it all by now.
We had a monkey in charge, and I mean,
exactly.
Did you see his ears? I mean, he could fly with those.
Come on, if he'd get enough speed up, yeah, he'd just go right into the stratosphere.
Yeah.
Anyway,
clap him a little bit.
Got an email from Dave Nickel. Said, "I've been listening to your actual play of Deadlands Reloaded, and he wants to know whether it's a pre-printed adventure or a homemade one. He wants to know if copies are available, and he loves our actual play. It's not a pre-made adventure. It is actually a homemade one of my own wicked devising. It's a campaign that started many years ago. About 5 years ago in the old Deadlands system, and then went through various hiatuses, and I decided last January to finish it. So, no, it is not a pre-printed adventure. Although I did sort of implement a few pre-printed adventures in it in the campaign, but most notably the Heart of Darkness. But
the Heart of Darkness.
Really, it's all original stuff, guys. So you can't go out and buy it. So if anyone wants to publish it, they have to like give me money.
Damn straight, you're the creator.
He also sent back an email, said, "I'm not too familiar with Deadlands. If I were wanting to start up a gaming group for it, what books and source materials would you recommend I get?" Deadlands is available in two different ways. Either way, you're going to need to get the Savage Worlds core rules.
$10 one.
You can either go to your, if you're wanting physical books, you can go to your local game store, order them from Gamers Attic, one of our sponsors. Or go to, if you want PDFs, go to RPG Now.
Yeah.
And there is what's called the Savage Worlds Explorers Edition, which is $10. I think it's $10 in PDF and yeah. $10 in in print. It's a little pocket-sized book. You know, it's about, you know, half-page size.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's a great little book. It's a great bucks. Buy. For $10, it's a magnificent buy.
It's roughly a paperback size. It's nice size book.
If you're wanting to do Deadlands after that, you need to get the Deadlands Reloaded source book. Now, they don't have a pocket version of that, but they do have a paperback, non-limited edition version. I have the limited edition, and it retails at about $40. Of course, if you get it as a PDF, it's significantly cheaper. What I'd say you'd probably be easiest doing is if you want to get the physical copy of the Savage Worlds Core Rules, the Explorer's Guide, Explorer's Edition, get that for $10, and then get the PDF version of Reloaded. It's a ton of fun to read, but that's where I'd go for it, is the Savage Worlds Core Rules and then the Deadlands Reloaded Setting Book. There's a lot of old Deadlands stuff still available as PDF from the previous series. They're easily spotted because they have bright orange covers. Those are for the old edition, and they're not entirely compatible with the Savage Worlds rules, but they're easily adapted over. It's not bad at all. But that's what you need, honestly. So.
Yeah, the little book, the Explorer's Guide, is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for players, too. I mean, that's a Christmas gift waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
$10, and your whole group can have the rules.
Exactly. We got an email from Doug Palmer. He said, "Hey, guys, started listening to your podcasts and actual gaming episodes a month or two ago. After a long hiatus from tabletop gaming, last played 2nd edition AD&D in 1991 or 1992, I'm thinking about getting back into the hobby. I've enjoyed your podcasts about local game stores, and we'll see if I can find. I'll see if I can find a regular group through the store, as you guys have repeatedly say, life comes first. I'm a lawyer with 3 boys under the age of 4. Blah blah blah. He actually writes blah blah blah. I'm not paraphrasing in there. I don't have the time and energy for weekly 4 to 6 hour sessions into the wee hours. But for Father's Day, I have asked my wife, who is not a gamer, to give me 6 hours to try gaming. She likes some fantasy literature, but is not a combat type. I'm hoping to find a gaming system that is okay to run with just a GM and one player, but is not combat-centric. What do you recommend? From one of the podcasts that sounded like Call of Cthulhu might be viable. Thanks. I would say no to Call of Cthulhu, but...
No, it's not a fantasy at all.
Well, the system is not bad. You can get the basic role-playing system through Chaosium.
Yeah, BRP.
BRP, and they do have a fantasy setting available for it. Honestly, we've talked about Savage Worlds. I would think Savage Worlds...
I would just do Savage Worlds,
yeah.
Because you could just start right with the book.
Stay away from hero games. Stay away from GURPS. Those are going to be far too complicated.
Just go with Savage Worlds. Just with the $10 book, you're not investing a lot.
Yeah,
it has all monsters you need. Yeah,
yeah, and it's got some sample stuff in there for running really running what you need. So I mean, that's what I'd say. There are other games out there. I mean, if Cthulhu is your thing, there is Cthulhu Dark Ages.
Just more like a fantasy setting,
which is more like a fantasy, but it is still Cthulhu and it's more investigation and, you know, I mean, combat.
It's
really
still nasty as all get out.
But obviously, if she's not into combat, she's into that. I've heard good things about Ars Magica.
I used to have that book.
There's a independent game called Burning Wheel, which apparently deals quite a bit with the role playing side. I'm not too familiar on it. I sent you some links, so. Hopefully that helps. I personally love getting emails like this, hearing about people who are getting back into the hobby, especially if you've been out of it for, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18 years, you know. So good luck with your gaming session on Father's Day. So I think that should be awesome. David Nickel emailed us again, said, "Hi, me again, just from my personal email. Are you planning on doing any more 4E adventures? I love listening to Keep on the Shadowfell. In your Deadlands campaign, I understand you use a deck of cards for initiative. Do you pass out cards every round, or do you deal a stack of cards for each person face down, and they turn over each round?"
Deals from a deck of cards, just a single deck. Yeah, and when the cards are done, he
shuffles
them
up. The old system used to use multiple decks, but the new system is just a single deck.
Which I think works a lot better.
Yeah.
Because that way you don't have four people drawing. That way you don't have four people drawing jokers all at the same time, because that gets hectic real quick.
As far as the 4E adventures, we actually just today posted episode one of our Tallis 4th edition game. So it's an adaptation of the third edition adventure, Night of Dissolution, to 4th edition rules. So there is that. Jeremy's going to get his 4th edition game started up again, hopefully soon.
Hopefully the 20th. But we'll see.
So we're going to continue. So, I mean, we're going to have at least two regular 4th edition games pretty much going on for the foreseeable future. So as far as that's concerned, so we're going to get that in there. Let's see. I think that's right about it. We received an email from Aaron Thies over from SSDC Incorporated, who sent us a review copy of Battle Lords, of the 23rd Century, the Players, the Galactic Underground 2 book. Sent us a PDF copy. Just want to let you know we got it. We're gonna take a look at it, and we might review it in an upcoming episode. So, just wanted to say thanks for the email. That is really about it. I have a couple shout outs I'd like to give. As I mentioned, the Tallis game has started broadcasting. I want to say thanks to Monty Cook for allowing us and giving us permission to use the Tallis logo and some of the Tallis artwork for an image to use on the site. Also want to go ahead and thank Monty ahead of time.
He accepted me as one of his friends.
Yes, Monty is a good guy. I want to thank Monty. He is going to send us some audio to put on the front end of the Tallis podcast. So thanks to Monty. Also in line with the Tallis, I want to say thanks to the band Martian Love Secrets, who I contacted through GarageBand.com and asked their permission to use some of their music in the intro and outro to the Tallis show, and they said yes, as long as we attribute. So
I'm going to have to listen to some of that. I've never heard of
them. I just wanted to say thanks to them. Visit our website and look at the Tallis page. It's in our actual play section. Look at the Tallis main page, and at the bottom you'll find links to both the GarageBand page for Martian Love Secrets and to Monty Cook's website. So I wanted to say thanks to them. It was very nice of them to give us that permission. So that is about it. That's it for our lovely random encounters today. So, I mean, we had quite a few to go through. So before we go, I want to point out that our episode 50 is coming up. We've got a good, this is episode 48 right now, so you'll have one episode right after this is going to be 49, and then after that is going to be 50. We'd like to get as much fan mail as possible, so sort of between now and episode 50, anything you guys email us is going to be read out on episode 50. So please send us your wishes, send us your, you know, what you like about the show, what you'd like to hear us talk about, anything like that. I'm saying this at the end of the show because it's the end of the show, and you guys will be more inclined to send us an email now. But please, send us an email. Send us something for our 50th episode. It's not necessarily our birthday, but because we started airing in November of 06. So please send us an email, thousandmonkeysproductions@gmail.com. Visit CanadianCrusaders.com if you don't want to write that down. And get us some fan mail for our 50th episode. We want to hear what you have to say. Send us emails, send us MP3s, whatever you got, send it to us. So that's it for the show, I think.
Oh, before we go, we just want to give our condolences to the Carradine family.
Ah, yes, the passing of
just,
David Carradine.
Just recently, David Carradine passed away. So I wanted to say that before we actually signed off for the day. And to all of you out there who are gaming, keep your pencil sharpened and your dice nice and calm.
And keep them dice rolling.
Yeah.
Rolling, rolling, rolling.
Just don't anger the dice gods. Then you have to break it with a hammer.
And email us.
Yes, lots of email.
Take care, guys. See you later.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. You can find us on the web at www.canadiancrusaders.com. The Gamers Haven Podcast is a member of the Vorpal Network at www.vorpalnetwork.com. Gamers Haven and Thousand Monkey Productions are copyright 2008 and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Stop by our website to check out our actual play feed, fill out our feedback guest book, or hit us on the forums. Music on the show is used with permission by Joe Hero Band, www.joehero.com. And this has been a Thousand Monkeys production.
Friday night and we're headed for the drive-in. You were mad at something you thought I said. Thought a night out with you and me and BC would make everything alright. I thought you might like an Evil Dead marathon, watching Ash wreck and shop with his chainsaw. You were gone before he made it to the woodshed. Now